I failed you, Ben. I'm sorry.
I'm sure you are. The Resistance is dead. The war is over. And when I kill you, I will have killed the last Jedi.
Amazing. Every word of what you just said was wrong. The rebellion is reborn today. The war is just beginning. And I will not be the last Jedi.
Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey guys,
how's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. We've got a lot to talk about.
We sure do.
But you know, you wouldn't know it from Twitter. Everyone on there is talking about The Witcher. I feel like I went and saw the wrong thing.
Yeah, I feel like I did too. We usually open this show with movie chat. And this week, a little independent film you may have heard of called Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, opened. Now, Lindsay, I don't know how big a Star Wars fan you are.
I call myself a casual, probably. Yeah, I've seen all the movies. I've played some of the games. I know who the main characters are. But, you know.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, I would consider myself a huge fan, except that I don't actually consume anything outside of the films and the Mandalorian on Disney Plus, which is, I like that show a lot. It's very entertaining.
Me too.
It's pure escapism and it doesn't have a lot to say about anything, but you know, it's well shot and each episode is good. Like there hasn't been a bad one yet. I've been very entertained by all of it and it's very enjoyable. Like,
yeah, it's something I'm watching with my older son. We watch it together, and I'm always up for more Werner Herzog. So
yeah, right. Yeah, it's got a whole galaxy of incredible guest stars on that one. Nick Nolte, Werner Herzog, like plenty of folks. And it's just happy to see them. Carl Weathers is in it. Like
yeah,
it's good. Like that's a good show. But honestly, like I never watched. Because I know a lot of people, they'll read all the comics and read all the novels and watch the Clone Wars and Rebels and all of the animated shows and everything. And I just, I don't know. I like the movies and The Mandalorian's good. And back in the day, I read like the Thrawn trilogy. I don't know if you know what that is.
Nope.
Those are those Timothy Zahn books that were sort of famous for being some of the most popular Star Wars expanded universe novels. Or extended universe novels that, ever came around. And that was back when they were really expanding the franchise. Personally, I have really enjoyed the new films. I'm the sort of person that has a ranking of the nine films in the, I guess now they're calling it the Skywalker saga. I don't really count the spinoffs. I didn't really like either of them that much. Like, I'm kind of reconsidering Solo, but Rogue One, I think, it just wasn't my jam.
I fell asleep during Rogue One when I rented it, and I didn't watch Solo. So, I don't even have opinions on those, really.
I thought they were both kind of like shrug, but, I still haven't, like, I've never rewatched Rogue One. It's just kind of like there. But I just don't consider it part of the main series because it's not, doesn't have a number on it and it doesn't include any of the main characters. So, it has one of them. But
it's like a side story during the original trilogy, right?
Yeah. So I guess people would consider me to be casual because I don't really look at any of the, especially the post Disney acquisition. I don't really look at any of the expanded universe stuff, like, no comics, no shows aside from Mandalorian. Like, so I guess that makes me kind of a casual, but I do deeply love and always have since I was a child loved Star Wars.
Right.
And that has continued into adulthood. And I've really enjoyed, I really liked The Force Awakens. It's extremely charming. And mm-hmm. The Last Jedi is very easily the best Star Wars movie by a country mile.
Yeah.
Now, I know internet shoutmen have made this into some bullshit culture war thing, but that movie has more emotional maturity in 2 minutes than pretty much almost the entire rest of the, the series. Like, it is easily, and it is easily the best one. And I was rewatching it recently, and it's like, oh, this is like so different from the other films, and just in the terms of the pacing and the dialogue, the way it's shot, the way it treats its characters, what it aims for thematically.
Yeah, it's got some great. I was thinking about the thematic points of that one in particular compared to the one that I saw last night.
And, you mean it had some?
Yeah, that were. I mean, okay, so I understand that this is a kids' franchise at this point, but
I would not. So I don't like that term for anything that's not like children who are like obviously designed for children who are in elementary school. They don't make these things only caring about what kids would want to see.
But
they
that's don't. What the most recent one felt like
it's,
to me.
Well, we'll get to it. I prefer the term family film because it's
okay.
Or four quadrant. It is designed to, which is a movie term that means you're trying to hit every demographic at once.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, that's for children. Who cares?
Right.
That is a term frequently said by people who only watch Marvel movies. So
yeah, which is ridiculous.
Which is absurd. So, unless...
I mean, I was going to add the caveat that I work for a news agency where most of the entertainment is, by and large, for people under 18. So it's like... And I still very much enjoy it.
What?
So,
that's not true. There's a tremendous... There is a tremendous amount of anime that is made for salary men and older. It's... What are you talking
about? I would
say
there's tons of manga, but I think most of the anime that comes out is a lot...
Most of it airs teenage. At like midnight or later.
Well, yeah, okay, that's true. I concede.
I don't like the fact that nerd culture has become culture. Mm-hmm. I think has erased the idea of a lot of stuff being quote unquote for children. I really mm-hmm. do. Like, most anime is not made for kids. I wouldn't say that that's true. A lot of it is aimed at teens, but everyone I know that watches it is in their 20s or older. So when do you become an adult? I don't know. It seems like a meaningless thing to me anymore. You watch what you want. You like what you like. It doesn't matter who the intended demographic was. Mm-hmm. Like stuff that I consider for kids is like Sesame Street. That's for kids. That's for little kids.
I watch plenty of that too. So.
Sure, but you have children. So, like, I don't consider Star Wars to be like, oh, this is for kids. It's not for children.
Did anyone tell J.J. Abrams that, though?
Yeah. Before we really get into this, Lindsay, without spoiling anything, because I'm going to put a little spoiler warning in here.
Oh, God, are you going to make me do the synopsis for this movie?
No. Oh, God, no.
Please don't.
But how did you feel walking out of The Rise of Skywalker?
I was wrestling with both anger and a feeling of just mediocrity.
Okay. Well, who could argue with that?
No one, because it's the correct and right opinion.
Yeah. No.
Here we go.
I walked out just massively disappointed.
Yeah.
Just very disappointed. Like, look, I knew they were going to fucking whiff it.
Yeah.
I knew that they were cowards who were scared of YouTube shoutmen screaming about The Last Jedi being good,
mm-hmm.
Too good for them. And I knew they were going to be like, oh, well, let's try to make something that makes everyone happy. And you can't do that. Like, you can't make everyone happy, especially not in this age.
No.
And the shoutmen are largely disingenuous anyway. It's bad faith stuff designed to call attention to their channel because screaming anger about Star Wars, for some reason, gets you tons of clicks. Gets you lots of clicks and likes and subscribes. Anyway, I really did not like The Rise of Skywalker. I wouldn't say I hated it because it did have moments in it that I liked.
Right.
It wasn't like, this is the worst movie. No, of course not. But it... Man, what a letdown.
Yeah, so when I say anger, it's just because there's like a specific moment in it that made me mad. But the rest of it was, pretty much like a softball of a film. It was
okay.
just like...
Let me stop you right there. We will get... Okay, so, in the interest of people who have not seen it yet, but if knowing any of the details about the plot or anything will ruin it for you, right now is when you can skip ahead to 30 minutes. And then after that, you won't be spoiled anymore. Okay, moving on. So, it's almost... It's hard to summarize this, because the first hour is... It's written like a AAA video game. Like, it just jumps from plot point to plot point to plot point. It's just stuffed with bullshit that's not going to lead to anything, and like 100 narrative fake outs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this character's dead. No, they're not. Oh, this character's not going to remember his friends anymore. No, he's not.
Yeah.
Like, it's all these fake outs, and just fake out after fake out after fake out after meaningless fight after meaningless fight after meaningless fight. And it just races along through all this stuff, but none of it ever feels consequential.
Right. Like, yeah. It's like there's no stakes because they keep doing the fake outs. I felt like the very beginning of it, like, was edited poorly or something.
Yes,
like,
no, that was the first thing. Like, literally within the first 10 minutes, I was like, why is this so badly edited?
Yes. Yeah. Immediately. That's what I thought. It was like, this doesn't feel like it has a natural flow. And it feels like they're trying to, you know, get the quest underway, which fine, I guess. But I can tell that you probably like took 30 minutes out of here or something, because this doesn't make any sense.
You could lose a dozen plot points and half an hour out of this. And I was just like, wait, can't you just take half of this shit out that doesn't mean anything and slow this shit down? Like, slow it down. A big part of the reason that The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi worked so well is because they only give you just enough and they let a scene linger. Like, sometimes a scene will actually linger for a moment or two, and it's not just jumping to stuff that you can tell doesn't fucking matter. You're just waiting for them to get to the point.
So the movie starts out with basically a fetch quest. You compared it to a video game earlier, and that's what it felt like, was like a fetch quest.
Yeah, they have to get the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
But that MacGuffin shit lasts for, like, the entire first half of the film. Like, that's what they're doing for, the entire first half of this fucking thing. And I also felt like the characters, I don't know. So, like, here's a big point. So this was originally going to be directed by untalented hack Colin Trevorrow, who is responsible for the Jurassic World movies and a little film called The Book of Henry, which, if you haven't seen, don't watch it. That movie was so bad. It's the reason he got shit canned off of this one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The thing is, he still has a story credit. It still says story by Colin Trevorrow, and I've seen all of his work. So his fingerprints, all over this. Like, it has a lot of the same narrative structure problems and dialogue problems that a lot of his movies have. And so every line is either bullshit exposition or everyone being kind of passive-aggressively bitchy to each other for the whole time. Like, I didn't understand why Poe Dameron was being such a dick. Like, why was he being such an asshole? Like, he was kind of an asshole in The Last Jedi, but he was supposed to have learned his lesson. That was supposed to be character growth.
Right, yeah. His whole arc in The Last Jedi was teaching him the value of individuals' humanity. You know, he kind of thought, like, there was necessary sacrifices in war, and he was being kind of taking unnecessary risks that was costing lives,
right? Yeah, he was being humbled. He was like, you're not the savior of the universe. You have to work with other people. Like, you have to, and you have to listen to the leader if you're not the leader.
Right.
So, like, it didn't gel. Like, and they didn't give the characters that much really emotionally to even do, because they're racing from plot point to plot point.
Yeah.
So I was just immediately what? What is this?
The first question I had while watching the beginning. So the MacGuffin item is basically a GPS. We'll just call it that, I guess.
Yeah, Sith GPS to the hidden Sith planet.
Right. So Kylo Ren just, like, gets one at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And you don't really know where he is or how he knew it was there. And maybe it felt like something that maybe could have been included in the opening crawl a little bit. Like, because they usually do that. I thought the opening crawl was pretty short, and it didn't really explain.
Yeah, and it ruined something that could have been a much more dramatic reveal.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Emperor Palpatine's still alive. Who knew? The dead speak. All right.
Yeah.
You could
right in the beginning.
That.
Yeah.
You could have saved that for later. Like, oh, hey, look who it is. It's Palp. It's, you know, the Palpy. He's still here.
Which, Uncle Palp.
Yeah. Uncle. Grandpa Palp, I think. It's
Grandpa Palp at this point. Yeah.
They could have saved that and, you know, not immediately said, okay, here's what's going to happen. Like, I didn't understand a lot of the writing choices at all.
Right. Like, I know they put his laugh in one of the trailers, but you still didn't have to spell it out immediately.
Yeah, just immediately going with that. Like, you could tease it, but you don't just have to be like, hey, he's still alive and controlling everything. All right. Okay. All right. Like, yeah, I don't know. And then, like, Lando shows up. It's Billy Dee. It's nice to see Billy Dee Williams again.
Yeah.
But he shows up and he's just like, hey, guys, sorry, can't help you on one planet. And then later, when they need him to show up and basically do the end of Return of the Jedi again, which they reference heavily in this movie, they reference everything very heavily in this movie. It's like tons of fan service.
Yeah.
He just shows up randomly, like walking from the back of a vehicle or something. And he's like, hey, here I am. Now I can help. It's the end of the movie. It's like, oh, geez. Like I'm not really a person that gets like hung up on plot holes. It's just that the whole thing was just plot and zero emotion. It's not that I didn't like anything in the movie. I did really like the scenes with old Luke again. Well, you know, you see Ghost Luke, his Force ghost, and he sort of coaches Rey, and he does have one line that doesn't completely betray the themes of The Last Jedi when he tells Rey that, like, you know, blood is not important. What's important is your heart.
Right.
That's what The Last Jedi was trying to actually establish as, like, canon for the franchise, is that Rey's bloodline does not matter. Of course, it's rendered hollow because she's fucking Emperor Palpatine's granddaughter.
And that, okay, so I thought that was stupid for a couple of different reasons. I mean, other than thematically, based on, you know, what was going on in the last film, but I also thought it was dumb because it felt like a character conflict you would give to a child protagonist in, like, again, in like a children's movie. This is like a grown woman. She's lived with like no contact with her family whatsoever, like eked out her life on this planet. And then all of a sudden she finds out that her granddad is like, you know, was a space Nazi. And now she's not sure if she's actually a good or bad person anymore. That felt like a conflict that I would expect maybe a kid to grapple with who doesn't have as much of a sense of self. But, you know, this is, I just didn't believe it, I guess is what it is. I didn't believe that would be enough of a, like, something to like shake her at her core. It didn't really, no.
Yeah. You know, it is kind of a, like, I don't know. It feels like a kind of a cop out because it's like, well, we still need you to be related to some other famous character.
Right.
But so I didn't really buy Kylo Ren's character turn either.
No,
because he's murdered like a lot of people in the opening movie. He destroys like an entire solar system or whatever with the Starkiller base.
Yeah.
And in this one, he gets in a fight with Rey on the wreckage of the original Death Star.
Yeah.
She rams a lightsaber through his chest and then heals him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, well, anyway, and throws his lightsaber into the ocean and is like, maybe I should be a good guy.
And yeah, like, his ghost dad shows up and they get to do the I love you, I know thing.
He's like talking to his dad inside of his brain. Han Solo does not have a Force ghost. That was just supposed to be like Kylo Ren projecting, basically. But it was, but that's only in there because it's like, hey, remember Harrison Ford? Like,
right.
Like they could have handled that any number of other ways.
Remember those lines that we put on his and her shirts? Yeah. Let's do that again. Yeah. But this time it's his son.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
There's a lot of this movie is like,
I was like, okay, you know, give him a redemption arc, I guess, even if it's a really, really weak one, that's okay. He's kind of been like teetering towards some kind of redemption arc for a while, but
I figured the character would die because, of course, they were
right. Kind of go the Vader route.
And they were also foreshadowing the fact that he would be redeemed. I thought right. they were anyway. It watching the first two movies in this trilogy again, it's like, oh yeah, they're lean. You know, they're the character's a little bit more hard edged, but they're definitely leaning towards a redemption arc here, especially in The Last Jedi. But so, so then she tours the end of Return of the Jedi through the wreckage of the Death Star, and yeah. Then they wind up on this stupid Sith planet with that chair. That yeah, and Emperor Palpatine,
the Sith throne.
And Emperor Palpatine is being like, is like attached to this big like arm that's like moving him around, and he's doing his Ian McDiarmid thing and all that shit. I gotta tell you, I thought the ending was stupid as fuck.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
really stupid. I don't even understand who all those Sith were that were just like hanging out in the Emperor, like, what were they waiting for? And who is crewing all those Star Destroyers? Because there's, like, an entire...
I don't understand the Star Destroyer bit at all. Like, when he, like, magics up a whole Star Destroyer fleet from the ocean, he's like, ooh, I have all these secret ships. We've been making them on the Sith planet for just such an occasion. I was like, what?
There would have needed to be...
What?
I mean, I don't...
You got, like Sith engineers just hanging out here or something? A bunch Sith factory full of Sith people just, like, cranking out pieces for your Sith... Star Destroyer bullshit.
Yeah,
what?
It didn't. God, it was just like, and I'm not usually like a nitpicky
right.
person, but you don't have me emotionally. So right. and you aren't even trying to get me emotionally. So the only thing I can sit is pay attention to like, what is this plot? What is this story? Like, what? Huh? How? Huh? That's what I kept thinking, and also checking my watch and being like, this has to be over
right
soon, right? Soon, like soon,
yeah.
And it yeah, wasn't. So,
like, Rey shows up and he's like, I'm going to, you know, be in your body now. You're going to take all the Sith into yourself because you're supposed to be the Sith Empress. And I get that it's supposed to be the mirror of how the Force works and all the Jedi, you know, because in the beginning of the movie, she's trying to get the Jedi ancestors to speak to her. Right. So similar to that. But then, you know, when she's not cool with that anymore, he's like, well, I'll just take all of your guys' life force and live on forever. And my first thought was, wouldn't he just do that to begin with?
Would yeah,
Palpatine right? really give up his power first, and then his alternate idea is to continue? I think he would just sap the power to begin with, because...
I was just like, huh? Like, pretty much the whole, through the entire third act, it was just like, wait.
Yeah.
So the Emperor like tries to drain the life out of both. Kylo Ren shows up to try and save the day, and they do another fake out where he's obviously not dead.
Right,
not dead.
He throws
yet.
Him down the hole and yeah. he climbs back out.
Yeah, you're like, he's not. He's gonna come back. That's yeah. the character, the main major character. You're not gonna kill.
Not gonna let him die in a hole.
That'd be- yeah, just like blow him into a hole at the end. And then like the Emperor somehow shoots. Has such precision with his Force lightning that he is able to like shoot his hands up into the air and just start taking down all the Alliance, the Rebel ships.
All of them. Yeah, and there's like a giant fleet up there of all the believers, because that was sort of the message they're pushing in there, is like, you know, you're not alone.
Yeah, I did like that line. I did like that line.
Right, it was
like,
yeah.
Oh, they're just people. I did like that line.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, there's a few good things in it. I thought, that reminds me, it's just like General Hux just like, I'm the spy. You're like, wait, what? He's like, well,
yeah,
I just
thought that was sort of a double fake. That was
well,
weird.
Well, I just want Kylo Ren to lose. And then they just shoot him in the end. Anyway.
I was like, well, Nazis would probably do that. But on the other hand, like, I don't believe for a second this guy would ever help. Yeah.
Anyway, so Rey kills Emperor Palpatine, and using his own force, you know, foiled by my own merchandise, you know, it's like,
right.
like, oh no, I've been hoisted by my own.
It's like the third time that's happened to him, right?
Yeah,
where his like lightning was reflected yeah. back at him, and then
yeah. But then she's just like, well, now I'm dead, and then Kylo Ren comes and gives her all of his. I guess life force. I don't even know how this shit is supposed to work, because
I think it's supposed to be the little bit of her life force that she used to heal him, because he touches like the same part of her stomach.
Yeah.
That's
okay. Well, anyway.
Whatever, though. Yeah. He gives her the last of whatever life force he has.
That happens. She comes back to life. And then they kiss.
God damn it.
Which seemed to have angered you quite a lot.
It did. It made me really mad. really mad. One, so, there is like no romantic tension between the two of them the whole time. Maybe a little bit, but I mean, two, he does like one good thing, but he's murdered all of these people. He murdered so many people. And I was thinking about it. Like, imagine if he hadn't died. Would they have like walked back to the rebel camp together? And she'd be like, yeah, you know, like Kylo Ren decided that he's really sorry and he's my boyfriend now. And well, anyone would have been like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, we trust your judgment on that.
So this ship is called Raylo, and it is a hot point of contention on the internet. And those fans who are Raylo shippers got what they wanted. God, man, 2019. Anyway, they got what they wanted. There was a lady behind me who like squealed when it happened. Was, like, super happy. So here's an interesting wrinkle. The comics, which are post Disney wiping out the extended universe from the 90s and starting their own. Mm-hmm. These comics are recent. They established that, you know how Darth Vader was a virgin birth? Anakin was a virgin birth?
Right.
Okay.
Like, his mom was impregnated by mitochondria or whatever they're called.
So, technically, Emperor Palpatine is the person who manipulated the midichlorians inside of Darth Vader's mom's womb.
Oh, shut up. That's so stupid.
And created Darth Vader, which makes him Darth Vader's father. Darth Vader's daughter is Princess Leia. Princess Leia's son is Ben Solo. Who is Rey's grandfather? Palpatine. These two are related. That was incest. But I suppose that's nothing new for this franchise. There's another fun little fact for you on this one. Anyway. Mm. I really didn't like it. I loved the first two in the series, and I saw them both like four or five times in the theaters because I loved them so much. And they were, you know, it's fun to take someone who hasn't seen it and, you know, experience it again.
Yeah.
I will not be seeing this one again in the theaters. No fucking way. No way.
Another, it's kind of related to the ship we were just talking about, but, you know, they tease that that Finn is going to confess to her. Or something. Like, it gets brought up two times throughout the movie, and that never goes anywhere. You realize that?
They try to set him up with, like, another love interest, but then they're setting everyone up with, like, potential love interest, but then none of it really goes anywhere, really.
Like, yeah.
I was upset that they just totally wrote Rose Tico out of the story.
Yeah, and I wondered, like, if that was, again, them, like, bending over for all the people who gave and they're like, well, we just won't write you into this movie.
We're scared of these half a dozen angry screaming libertarians on YouTube, so we're just gonna do what they want. I think the guy from Lord of the Rings had more lines than she did.
Yeah.
anyway, so that's Rise of the Skywalker. What are you gonna do? Well, anyway, there's more. The Mandalorian's good. I suppose I'll just watch that.
Okay, so one thing that I thought was kind of weird, or I kept thinking about, was she goes to Luke's old house to bury the lightsabers, and, like, she, like, sleds down on, like, a piece of scrap or something. Isn't that where he, like, buried his aunt and uncle? And I kept thinking that she was just, like, sledding over their graves.
No, they buried him. They buried him outside. But yeah, no, the Tatooine homestead. Yeah, I was like, this dump is still here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moisture farm.
Moisture farm.
That's what it is.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. I'll watch it if someone else wants to watch it, I guess, like, at home after it comes out on home video. But yeah, it was extremely safe, and just, there's almost not a lot to talk about other than my disappointment with it, because it was just so by the books, sort of predictable. Whatever.
Here you go, fanboys. Isn't this what you want?
Right?
No, I prefer my brain to be at least somewhat engaged, and you proved you could do that in the last one, so I know you could have done it again. Like, it's kind of.
I felt like all the fight, like, the action sequences were better in The Last Jedi, too. Just like.
Yeah, better shot. Yeah, better film.
Yeah, better shot.
Well, more exciting, and there were emotional stakes, so you cared. Right. Like, that actually has, like, a tremendous amount to do with it. Like, you cared. Like,
yeah.
You gave a shit about what was going to happen. In this one, it was just like 50 billion things have happened and there's no emotional connection. So, whatevs.
Yeah.
Whatevs. Okay. Spoiler chat ends. Okay. Enough about that. What's in the news?
All right. We got three things in the news. One of them is about the Oscars.
Oh, really? The Oscars, you say?
The Oscars, yeah.
The Academy Awards.
This is just about Makoto Shinkai's Weathering With You. It was submitted for two categories, animated, and they're calling it, it's not called Best Foreign Language Film anymore. They're calling it Best International Feature Film now. Mm. But it was submitted for both, but it did not get in the International Feature Film category. I don't think they've released the short list for animated feature yet. On the plus side, Battle Angel Alita did make the short list for visual effects.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's good. Those short lists are usually not, like, the short list has, like, what, like half a dozen more entries than will actually wind up on the list itself. So it's typically like, okay, well, you can kind of tell what's going to get nominated and what won't. I would imagine Weathering With You will probably make the animated feature shortlist. I would maybe it might. I don't know. Yeah. It was a huge success financially. But the thing is that it hasn't opened here in the States yet. And I don't know how many Academy of voters have actually seen it.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how that actually panned out. I would not have expected it to get international. I would not have expected that.
Yeah, it was the first anime submission from Japan since Princess Mononoke in 1998. So they don't typically try to submit their anime films into that category.
Yeah, plus international feature is going to go to a live action thing. I would not expect an animated film to pick something like that up.
Yeah.
So if it's going to get nominated for anything, it's going to be animated.
Yeah, I
don't
feel
know.
Like I can't really make it. I still haven't seen it either, so I feel like I can't make a good judgment on even whether it should be nominated or not.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either. I'll see it pretty soon, I think. But I don't think it stands a chance. I don't. No, not at all. G-Kids isn't even opening it here until like the 17th of January or something like that, which is, I think, past the voting deadline. So,
I want a qualified run somewhere then, if it can be nominated, right?
I think maybe they had some screenings that would have made it helped it qualify, but I don't know. I don't really know the exact behind the scenes on that process.
Yeah.
But I do know that like what you can expect from Academy voters, which is that Toy Story 4 or Frozen 2 will probably win Best Animated Feature. So let's not get our hopes up here. And a nomination, it's nice for Shinkai, but it doesn't do anything to help the industry or anything like that. People don't really give that much of a shit about the Oscars anymore. So it's a nice thing to have, but I don't know. I feel like this could dovetail into what I think your next story is, which is, if he did get the nomination, it would probably light a fire under Hayao Miyazaki's ass to maybe get his movie done a little faster.
Yeah, he's completed 15% of the movie in 3.5 years.
Yeah, but he's doing most of it himself, right? Like, that's like he's animating this a lot just on his own.
Right. Why do you think he's chosen to do it that way?
Because Ghibli has shrunk. He's alienated so many people at this point that, and he's such a perfectionist about his own work that he's probably being stubborn. Like, they could probably bring in a raft of animators to help him finish this shit faster, but it's also possible that the script is a mess and he's not done writing it yet. After so many years, if he's really only 10-15% of the way through it, so what does that mean? It's going to be like 20 years until this movie's done.
He's 78 years old.
At that pace. So he'll finish it when he's in his 90s. Like, he's just a stubborn guy. I mean, look, I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And I really love all the documentaries that sort of show us the cranky grandpa side of Hayao Miyazaki. Well, I suppose it's not a side. It's just like who he is.
It's his entire persona.
Yeah. And I'm excited to see his movie, but at this point, it's like, am I going to? Like,
yeah.
The dude still chain smokes. Like,
yeah. Chain smokes. He goes for a walk every morning. He picks up trash in the neighborhood on Sundays. And I guess in his free time, he animates this.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose. But Ghibli doesn't really produce much of anything else. So, like, they sell a lot of merchandise. They run the museum. But from what I understand, their staff is, like, it's pretty small. You know, after the last time, like, just, I don't know, just watch the Kingdom of Dreams Madness and then Neverending Man, I think is the name of the other one.
Yeah.
And they're both very good. They both provide a lot of insight into exactly what's going on here. And I don't know, it's a little tragic because if only he had not alienated so many people and Ghibli had maybe managed their resources a little bit better, I feel like it wouldn't be like this.
By resource, you mean like new talent.
New talent and funneling merchandise money back into the studio so they can keep talent. That's right. A big thing. But yeah, I don't know. It's tough to know how to feel about that. I do hope I get to see the film, but come on, man, hire some staff.
Right, because I think outside of him working on this, I'm not aware of anyone associated with Ghibli still working on, and it's not like they have another feature being made by somebody, right?
No.
Like it's just
this.
It's just Miyazaki animating alone.
Yep. Well, yeah. Watch those documentaries and you will not be surprised as to why that is.
Yeah.
So anyway, anything else?
Yeah. The last one doesn't have anything to do with Oscars or Miyazaki. It's just Bookwalker. So for people who are listening that aren't familiar with Bookwalker, it's an ebook store that is owned by Katakawa, which is one of the biggest publishers in Japan. And they have a Japanese store. They also have a global store where everything that's in English is sold. And they released a list of their most popular light novel manga for the year based on the sales at the global store. And I was really surprised when I looked at it because the number one was something I had never, ever heard of. And it's called Under One Roof with the Beast. Have you heard of it, Zach?
Nope.
That's okay, because it kind of came out of nowhere. It's a mature yaoi manga, single volume, and it's also 2 years old, which I thought was kind of strange. So I started asking on Twitter, like, why did this blow up? I've never heard of this title. It's only one volume, and it outsold all of the Rising of the Shield Hero light novels. And it's, what's up with this? And I guess they did a push for sales by doing a audio drama for it. They got in English, they got a popular YouTuber to voice an audio drama for this yaoi volume, and it worked.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was kind of surprised. I mean, I know that's a thing. You know, I when I'm writing up news stories and stuff, every once in a while there'll be an announcement about a bonus drama CD with some voice actors being the characters, and it like comes with a special edition of the manga volume, but we don't usually get that in English. And I don't know, other than maybe quite a while ago, there was like maybe one company that tried to do a couple English ones, but I can't remember exactly who or for what. But otherwise we don't get that kind of stuff over here, but maybe we should, because it looks like it really boosted the sales of this.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad to hear it. That's good news in the year of not good news that we have had. Okay, does that do it for news?
Yeah, that does it.
Okay, so quick show note, and this is relevant to what's coming next. This is our final episode of the year. We'll have another one for you the week of New Year's, but we're taking next week off. So what better time then to count down our top five movies and anime of the year? So we'll just do this in a round robin format like you heard on our previous 4-hour episode. I figured we would start with movies. Is that cool with you, Lindsay?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay. So I have a bunch of runners up because this was a great year for movies. There were so many good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And what were your runners up for movies this year?
So my runners up, one was Hustlers, which was a really good movie about sex workers taking on Wall Street, essentially. Mm-hmm. Got Jennifer Lopez in it, bunch of great actresses in that. Highly recommend it. Just when I had to cut it down to five, it didn't quite make it. Another one I got on here is Spider-Man Far From Home, which I thought did some pretty interesting things with the Marvel formula as far as the villain. You should go see it just for Jake Gyllenhaal, really. That also includes Avengers Endgame, which, I don't know, that was sort of like an emotional climax for me for 10 years of Marvel movie madness. So it was fulfilling in its own way, but again, not like amazing, I suppose. And then another one that might be, I don't know, kind of weird, but was Extremely Wicked and Shockingly Vile, which has Zac Efron in it as Ted Bundy. Mm. So that's, you know, Lindsay's crime hat movie for the year. Watch it because it does not revel in Bundy's crimes and how awful they were. And, you know, kind of usually serial killer movies are really gristly and it's just sort of about shocking the audience. So you can go, oh, can you believe? But that's not what it's about. It's about his girlfriend, Liz, who actually had a child from a previous relationship. And he put on this veneer of like the perfect boyfriend with her. And then her finding out what he did and looking back on their relationship and how it affects her. So it's more her story than Bundy's story, which we all know very well by now. So those are my runners up. I didn't get out probably to see as much movies at the beginning of the year. You can tell that a lot of these were stuff in the later half that I went and saw when we started the podcast. I started getting more involved with going to the movies and seeing what was out and seeing what I enjoy. So
yeah, because I'd be like, yo, I like to talk about movies on the show. So, hey, could you go see this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, hopefully you enjoyed the experience.
Yes, I did. A bunch of these movies that are going to be in my top five, I probably wouldn't have seen if I hadn't started doing the podcast with you. So, you know, definitely was worth it.
Great. That makes me happy.
Yeah.
So my runners up, My Name is Dolomite on Netflix. Extremely enjoyable biopic about Rudy Ray Moore and his incredible filmmaking and comedy career.
Yeah.
Really likable and funny. Stuck with me for a while, like unlike a lot of Netflix stuff. But this is on Netflix. It was written by the same guys who wrote one of my absolute all-time favorite films, Ed Wood. And they've stumbled a few times as screenwriters, but they are back to their form in this one. Like, they really nailed it. It's extremely entertaining and very sympathetic and memorable characters, great performances. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's good.
Also on Netflix, Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, also starring Kylo Ren, Adam Driver, who turns in a really great performance, as he always does, and Scarlett Johansson as a couple that it's not so much, it's very empathetic towards everyone in the film, and it's not necessarily, it is a brutal divorce. Mm. But it's more about how a relationship evolves and changes over a divorce, and it's not so much about a breakup as it is an evolvement of what their relationship was and what it will be moving forward. I thought it was very, very thoughtful. Like I said, excellent performances, good pacing. You know, I think people will enjoy that one.
It sounds like something that would make me cry.
It's a good one. You should definitely watch that one.
Okay.
I strongly recommend it to you specifically. Anyway, also a little film called Lion King, which I just didn't have the heart to put on my top five because that would be like putting, well, it's hard to explain because it's such a faithful remake of the original with just a different skin on it.
Yeah.
I really loved the new one. And I
know you love it. I'm really surprised it's not in your top five.
And I really love the old one, but it's the same movie with like very minor changes. And there were five ones that, you know, look, I have to hand it to the stuff that's on my top five. Yeah, I love The Lion King, of course.
How many times did you see that in theaters?
Eight.
Eight?
I dated a lot over the summer and they would say like, oh, I haven't seen The Lion King yet. And I'm like, you haven't. And then I would take them to see The Lion King and enjoy my, see, I know I'm going to have a good time because I love The Lion King. And it is the same movie. It's very snappy. They changed a few things. It's like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes longer, something like that. They didn't really add much. But a lot of people bitch about the way it looks and everything and how they don't like they think it's like Uncanny Valley. But I think it's adorable. Like, the cats are great. I love the way their mouths move and stuff. Like, I love the way it looks. Like, I thought it was just the right balance. I totally got what they were going for. No, it's not going to be to everyone's taste. but it is now also the highest grossing animated film in Disney feature animation history, so haters gonna hate. Anyway, last one on my runners-up is Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which first time I saw it, I was like, The next time I saw it, I was like, And then I saw it like three more times. And it turns out I really like that movie.
Yeah,
it's got it definitely has problems. It definitely has problems, but it is a, you know, I'm a big movie guy. I live here in Los Angeles. It was shot, you know, in, you know, right around my neighborhood and everything. And like, I saw the arc light when they had it all done up for this movie, like, you know, the retro look. And the way Los Angeles is filmed is great. I really, really liked the Leonardo DiCaprio character. I thought that was a really strong portrayal and a great performance of a spiraling, you know, alcoholic who's really having a hard time getting his shit together.
Yeah.
I liked the Brad Pitt character, even though they complicated it a little bit with the whole, like, well, maybe he killed his wife, maybe he didn't kind of thing. And the Bruce Lee stuff is a little, it's problematic, but I did get where they were going for with that, and it is I see it as sort of clumsy respect, even though his estate was really pissed off by it and everything. But as a hangout movie, something you put on when your friends are over and you just kind of like maybe smoke some weed and enjoy it, especially if you're into the movies, because it is definitely for like pop culture junkies. It is Quentin Tarantino excess. Yeah, I can't deny it. It's one of my favorite things of the year. I really enjoyed it. But, you know, I admit to its flaws. But I did really enjoy it. Anyway, so those are my runners-up. Lindsay, you're number five.
My number five is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, okay. Well, what do you think?
So I really enjoyed that movie. I thought Leonardo DiCaprio gave a great performance of a guy, like, battling with anxiety, trying to be a good actor, feeling like he's not a leading man anymore. I really, really, really enjoyed the ending.
Oh, yeah.
A lot, as far as a take on the Manson story and repurposing it into a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, Brad Pitt still looks great with his shirt off. So, I mean, yeah. Really.
I was like, there's definitely going to be a scene where he takes his top off.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I got to get on this roof and fix his cable for him. Like, still got it.
Yeah, both of them are really in give a shit mode. Like, yeah. Leo is frequently, he's almost never in I don't give a shit mode, but he only has to take projects that he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Brad Pitt, but Brad Pitt sometimes comes across as though, like, yeah, whatever, I'm in this. But yeah. In this one, it really felt like he was going for a very specific type of character, and I thought he nailed it. He totally nailed it. I like that movie a lot. It's something I'll throw on in the background and just leave it, and I don't have to pay attention or anything, but it's, you know, just the sights and sounds, it's nice. Agreed. My number five is a film you may have heard of called Alita Battle Angel, which took 20 years to make or whatever, and I love the shit out of this weird ass movie, which is a shockingly faithful adaptation of both the manga and the original OVAs. I've talked about it a lot on this show, so you don't really need any more than that. But, like, incredible fight scenes. I really love the narrative arc. It snaps. It goes. It looks great. It's very cinematic. It's very James Cameron. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they actually swung for the fences on some of the harsher plot points, like her boyfriend dying and all that shit.
Yeah.
Her pulling her heart out of his chest, cutting his head off and attaching it to her fucking heart. Like, I love that kind of over the top shit. And they just nailed the tone of this thing.
Then they also send someone's organs up in a suitcase.
Yes, Jennifer Connelly gets turned into a floating brain and eyeballs and two hands and then sent up to the rich people, floating city in the sky where Edward Norton rules with his little 80s goggles. It's stunningly faithful and a hellacious thing to watch. I recommend it to people, and I recommend it to you, and you were like, that was terrible. And I was like, no.
Yes, Lindsay didn't like the Alita movie. I guess we're going to, like, put that out in the open.
And I was like, no, wrong. Wait, you work with anime for a living and you didn't like this?
I didn't.
It's extremely.
I had issues with some of the script, I guess, is what it mostly was. I thought there were parts of it that were just a little too cheesy.
I'm making a face. I'm making a face at you right now that you
can't. Is it the Kermit face?
That you cannot see.
I can't, but I bet it's the Kermit face. I bet it is.
No, Alita Battle Angel is fucking phenomenal. We'll never get anything like that ever again. Like, even if they make a sequel, I doubt Cameron would be as involved in it as he was in this one. And so that was the magic thing, I think.
Yeah, we really definitely, I don't think we'll ever get a sequel either. I think we had an article up a while ago where the producer, someone said, if you want a sequel to this, you got to ask Disney.
Yeah, so right. And
Disney, not ever going to fucking happen.
Disney's not going to make it.
No.
I mean, they have, like, Disney has decided to put their adult films, you know, movies for, you know, whatever, anything aimed at over 30 or whatever under like the Fox label, I think. So, you know, and Fox Searchlight and all that stuff that all still exists. Like they're keeping all of that. And, you know, which mirrors the way they did things in the 90s with like Touchstone Pictures and Miramax.
Yeah. I was going to say, didn't they used to do that with Miramax?
Yeah. But Miramax and Touchstone. Like if it was PG-13 or over, it would be Touchstone. If it was rated R, it would be Miramax. So, okay. Like, that's kind of how they do it. And I, you know, I don't think they're just going to stop making movies like that, but I doubt they'd make another Alita. <Yeah. laughs> And frankly, I don't need another one.
You don't need to know what happened to Jennifer Connelly's hands.
I already know because I've read all the manga.
Again,
unless you can put that exact same team together and give them enough time to make it polished and good, because this thing had forever to get made. That's why it's good, is because they had all the time in the world. It was James Cameron, who could do pretty much whatever he wants, but he's doing Avatar for the next decade or whatever. Probably
forever, how long he wants.
Yeah, well, that's another four fucking movies. So
is it four now?
Yeah, he's making 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Oh, okay.
Which, gosh, doesn't anyone need Avatar 5? Anyway, so, I love Alita. It's my number 5. What is your number 4?
My number 4 is Ready or Not.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yep, that one was fun. We talked about it a little bit before, kind of compared it to Knives Out, and we also, you know, talked about it earlier on the podcast, but it combined two of my favorite things, attacking the capitalist system and just murdering people in fun ways.
Yeah. Yeah. it'll come up later.
Yeah. It was just it's a fun romp. It was not based on anything. It doesn't need any sequels. You know, it's about a girl who, well, a woman now, but she, you know, she grew up in the foster care system, is going to marry into this capitalist family that's got a pact with Satan and kills them all instead.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's on my list. It'll come up.
Yeah.
My number 4, which I just saw, is Shia LaBeouf's autobiographical work called Honey Boy.
I really need to see that.
Which is, I didn't expect it to be on this list, but I saw it and it blew me fucking away. So this is a film Shia LaBeouf made with, it's directed by a lady. And what he decided to do was basically sort of fictionalize his childhood. You know, he was on the show called Even Stevens when he was a kid at the Disney Channel. And his father was a physically and emotionally abusive alcoholic drug addict who beat the shit out of him and treated him like absolute garbage for that entire period of his life. And it traumatized him. And the movie is unflinching. Shia plays his own father.
God.
Now, putting yourself through that, recreating your own trauma like that.
Yeah.
Now, that's artistic bravery. And Shia has come from, and the movie kind of dips back and forth between him as an action star and him as a child star. And, you know, everyone's doing the Shia. The actors are all doing the things where, like, they rub their head and they hook their thumbs into their armpits, you know, like he does all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they're all doing that. So it's very clearly him. And he does really wonderful performances. Really wonderful performances. And it really blew me out of the water. Like, especially if you were abused as a child, it's going to be really hard to watch.
Yeah.
But because it's so unflinching. And the things that happen in it, you're like, did that really happen to you? And it turns out, yes, these things really did happen to him. And, you know, he's transitioned into basically a performance artist. Like, he owns a repertory theater, I think, in New York now, where they run plays and they do experimental stuff. He makes the art that he wants to make. And to me, that's a pretty beautiful story. And, like, he's gotten to a pretty good place, like, if you see interviews and things with him. But this movie is, like, simultaneously absolutely harrowing and an also gigantic cathartic release.
Yeah.
So if you have the sand for it, do not miss this one. It's extremely good. I was not expecting to just be like, whoa. But yeah, no, I was. So it shot up to number four.
Yeah. Anyway. I didn't know anything about his family prior to the trailer coming out, but I always had a really big soft spot for him. I saw him on Even Stevens, you know, as a, I don't know, I was maybe like 12 or something when that was on TV. And, you know, watched his rise into going into the Transformers franchise and Indiana Jones and all this kind of stuff. And I loved his acting. Like, most of the reasons I saw those movies was just because I really enjoyed his performance. And then he started having a lot of problems, you know.
I felt
for him. I really did. It was one of those things where it's like, man, you know, I know I felt like I saw the potential almost. And so it felt really sad to see him, you know, seemed like he was falling apart. And I just remember thinking like, man, I hope he figures stuff out. Even if he doesn't want to do this anymore, I hope he figures stuff out. It was just.
And it turns out he did. So good for him.
Yeah.
Absolutely excellent. Could not recommend it more. Your number three.
My number three is Us.
Okay.
Yeah. Still need to revisit this one again. It just gives you a lot to think about. It's, you know, Jordan Peele once again playing with horror expectations in his own way. It's not Get Out, but it's still a pretty good sophomore effort. I, you know, didn't see the big twist at the end. And I don't know, just it kept me engaged the whole time. I think it mixes humor with horror really, really well. I still feel like it had, even though its message isn't as clear, it still had a lot to say, just about specifically about stuff in the 80s, that charity organization that was supposed to help the homeless, and the duality. What did they call it? I don't know if they call it switching or not, that people of color feel like they have to do in society. The sort of performance between both, if you want to be successful, but also staying true to your culture. I just thought it was a really, really good film. I don't know if I have anything else. Did it make your list?
No. I honestly thought Us was actually kind of weak. I enjoyed the movie, but it felt like sort of it was too obtuse, and it, in my opinion. And it felt like kind of a long episode of The Twilight Zone. And like, I got what he was commenting on, but I felt it would have been helped by being just a little bit more direct and a little bit less surreal.
Okay,
I felt like the storytelling in it could have used some work, but it's a good movie. Like, I did enjoy it. I am going to revisit it. I think I bought that on Black Friday, so I'll take another look. Yeah, no, a lot of people have that on their top films of the year list, and it was good. So, yeah, good choice. My number three is Hustlers, which we talked about just briefly, and we've already talked about on the show. This movie, and I've seen it again since I saw it in the theater, it's out on home video now. It's really, really fucking solid. This is basically Goodfellas, except the gangsters in it, so to speak, are, like you said, marginalized sex workers taking from the rich and giving to themselves. And it's very righteous, and it's very much intended to be, like, Jennifer Lopez's character is intended to be the heroine. It's not supposed to be like, oh, look how evil these strippers are for stealing from these guys or grifting them.
Yeah.
You know, the people that they're grifting have destroyed the country, basically, and the economy. So it's very righteous and really wonderful performances the whole way through. Very snappy paced, a lot. Like, it takes a lot from Goodfellas in terms of its, and that's not to say it's ripping it off or anything, but if you enjoy the film Goodfellas, which who doesn't, the snappy pacing and the really like intensely realized characters and just the way it brings you through the story, it's so well structured. And it would have been my number two, but something else came out that I liked even more. So anyway, that's my number two. That's my number three. What's your number two?
My number two is, maybe this is a controversial pick, but it's Midsommar.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, I really like Midsommar. It's very weird, very strange, but it still has a strong through line. You know, it's about a breakup, and I think a lot of people maybe went into it initially not expecting that. I knew from talk before I went to go see it, so that didn't catch me off guard. And it's just about, it's about this couple, essentially. You know, they go to Sweden, I think it is, for a college thesis, to watch this festival that only happens like once every 90 something years. And one of the guys brings his girlfriend along because she's just had a really traumatic experience. She had a sister who was mentally ill and killed herself and their parents at the same time. So she's, you know, grieving very heavily over that. But he doesn't want to be with her. So he keeps that to himself because he doesn't feel like it's the right time. And then sort of starts passive aggressively, like taking out his resentment towards not wanting to be with her on her while they're on this trip. He cheats on her. You know, it also shows that he doesn't really have, he's kind of a coward. He doesn't have any of his own ideas of what he wants to do. He's going to copy his friend's thesis while they're there, this other kind of stuff. And then, you know, he gets sewed up in a bear suit and lit on fire.
Yeah. It's not really a horror movie in so much as it is an art film. An art film about someone surviving something. I don't even know if I would put it that way.
Sends him to his death.
It's a good movie. They put out an extended cut of that with like an extra 20 minutes or something like that.
Which it's not just the sex scene. I don't need more of that part.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I just kept waiting for the shitty boyfriend to get what was coming to him.
He was.
Because I knew it was coming to him. Yeah. That's a good one. That's definitely one to seek out, but it's not really a traditional horror movie in the sense that you might expect.
I would say it's unsettling.
It's a little bit, it's so much of it is just about trauma and surviving trauma and then being put through more trauma and figuring out how to survive that. Like, so much of it is that, and
breaking up with your shitty boyfriend
yeah. Yeah, good pick. Yeah. My number two is a film we've already talked about and recreated on this show, The Lighthouse, starring Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, about two men and a lighthouse. And it's not out on home video, and I don't want to spoil anything for you. We've already discussed it, but I don't know. I've heard that you're fond of me, Lobster.
Please go see The Lighthouse. It is so fucking weird. And we don't get this, like, this kind of experimental, like, just fucking with the
fucking weird. Yeah, but
so you got to support it when it happens.
Yeah, like, nothing struck me quite like The Lighthouse did this year. Like,
yeah.
I'm not sure how many folks out there actually went to see it, but it's out on home video very soon. And don't deprive yourself of this experience, because that's what it is. It's an experience.
Yeah.
Really just hellacious. I promise you will not have seen anything like this.
Nope. I can't think of a time before, and I don't know if there will ever be a time after, where I was actually compelled to say, "What the fuck?" while watching a movie in a theater. Like, I muttered it under my breath because I still, you know, had enough decorum not to ruin it for other people, but like, I had to. It was like, got to the last third of that movie, and I'm just like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
What the fuck?
But then
what is happening right now?
And then you walk out and go, "That was amazing."
Oh, God, what was that? I need everyone to go see it.
Yeah, no, easy number two. That is an easy number two for me. We got to your number two already, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so your number one.
My number one is The Lobster. Wait, no, that's actually a movie. My number one is The Lighthouse.
Oh, okay.
So we already talked about it. I was going to make a joke, and I realized, no, The Lobster is actually a movie I've been meaning to watch.
Good pick. On Netflix. Speaking of things we've already talked about, my number one is Ready or Not.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Wow.
Easily the best movie, but far and away the best movie I've seen this year. I'd said this about a million times on our previous show, but I really like things that are really direct and intense. And Ready or Not is both of those things. And it doesn't fuck around. This is a lady who came from nothing, who marries into a rich family that hunts her for sport, and then tries to sacrifice her to Satan, and they lose. And she's got the chucks and the wedding gown and the bandolier and the cigarette. And it's like, This is fucking badass. And it's a direct social commentary. It does not pull any fucking punches at all. Snappy 90 minutes and it's done. Doesn't waste any of your time. Hilarious. Great performances. Keeps you guessing a little bit. Has some real fucking brutality in it. This is an extremely violent film. So, like, keep that in mind. And doesn't even take it easy on the rich kids. Like, they have children.
I was going to say, so the brutality, I'm like, bitch slaps a kid.
More than that happens. Anyway. Yeah. if you have not seen Ready or Not, it is my absolute favorite of this year. I will probably never shut up about it and will always recommend it to people. See that shit. It's really good. And actually double feature it with Knives Out and ask yourself which one of these is better. The answer to that one is Ready or Not. So,
I think Ready or Not, it is the tighter film of the two.
Yeah, it's significantly tighter.
Yeah.
I love Knives Out. Like, it's a really good movie. But this one, you know, and it's weird that they both came out pretty close to each other and they touch on so many of the same themes and have a similar aesthetic and everything. Mm-hmm. But they are very different films. They will definitely remind you of each other.
Yeah.
And I think Ready or Not holds up as the better one. As like, oh, this is tighter, snappier, more direct, gets right to the point. And is, you know, it is a lot more brutal. I'll say that. Anyway, Ready or Not, my number one, easy. Okay, let's get to anime. So, do you have any runners up?
No.
Me neither. I gotta say, this was kind of a weak year for anime.
I
scrolling through the list of 2019 shows, I was like, yeah, I like that one. Yeah, that one was all right. But, like, nothing I would really put on a top five. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of, you know, capital C content. Like, it was a lot of that. And so, honestly, though, it wasn't tough to narrow it down to a top five. There were five that I liked really a lot.
Yeah.
But I have no runners up. Like, yeah,
the closest thing I have to a runners up is something that hasn't finished yet. So, like, Stars Align maybe would have made it, but the show's not over yet. So that's all.
I don't know. I mean, I've only seen half of my number two, so I wouldn't, you know, like, I don't, yeah. You know, that part was good. Anyway, what's your number five, bud?
My number five is Sarah Zanmai.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Ikuhara takes on Yaoi, has some interesting stuff to say about being true to yourself and, you know, letting your freak flag fly and not feeling guilty about it.
Yeah. And like, actually, I think I already know, like, a lot of these are things we've done episodes on.
Yeah.
So we don't need to go really deep into it. But that's also on my list. But it's really good. I feel like people were a little harder on it than they maybe should have been. And I honestly do think Ikuhara works better when he's truncated. So I didn't mind the short.
It could have used like maybe another episode or something. I felt like, God, I can't even remember the characters' names now, so I'm going to screw this up. But the two cops,
the otter cops.
The otter cops, those aren't the main characters. Wish they were. But I mean the main boy at the beginning who, you know, is dressing as the idol. Like, right. I felt like they kind of resolved that, but not really. It was still sort of like a question mark there on if he identifies as trans or not.
Yeah.
It kind of seemed like they wanted to play with that, but they didn't.
That was I think they kind of chickened out on that one.
Yeah, I think they did too.
But, you know, that stuff is a little more difficult in Japan, so.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily blame them. I do wish they had, like, fleshed that out a little bit more.
Yeah.
But there are people, plenty of folks, who are cross-dressers but not transgender.
That's also true.
So that's also a valid thing.
Yeah.
And if that's what they were going for, all right. You know, no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
It was certainly very memorable.
Yeah.
My number five is actually Vinland Saga. Okay. Which we've talked about on this program before. Admittedly, it has gotten significantly slower.
Yeah.
In the past, like, you know, couple months, but it's still very, very, very entertaining. Historical epic about, you know, Vikings and this kid and his quest for revenge. Like I said, we've talked about this one before, but it's still very entertaining. I don't actually really mind the slowness that much. Like, I'll put Vinland Saga on in the background and, like, kind of catch it, like, you know, in moments, and I can still get what's going on. I appreciate the length and breadth of the storytelling. It has a lot of great characters in it. Performances are really good. Animation's really good. Opening is fantastic, as everyone knows, and so is the close. But yeah, if you like historical fiction, even though people bitch about how slow it goes, I mean, it is long running, so just get used to it.
Yeah.
But
when's the next time we're going to get a Viking anime?
I don't see the problem.
Never. Who knows?
So yeah, I would recommend Vinland Saga. What's your number four?
My number four is Carolyn Tuesday.
Okay. Boy. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Our lists are virtually identical.
Probably
a different order. Yeah. You've only seen the first half of that too.
Right. Yes. Because we haven't gotten this. We're supposed to get the second half, I think, next month.
Yeah, no, it's Christmas Eve.
Oh, Christmas Eve. Well, Merry Christmas. I'll get to watch Carolyn Tuesday.
Thanks, Netflix.
Yeah, thanks, Netflix. Yeah, I mean, we had a whole show about Carolyn Tuesday, but I like everything about it. It's as a sci-fi story, you know, it's very representative of society as a whole. Like, there's lots of different people. They're all represented there, you know. Watanabe really, really stuck with it. The music is fantastic. It's also really funny. They have some interesting commentary stuck in there too, especially with the DJ guy and the art he has in his house and everything. It's just I think I went over that in the longer show, but you know, he's like a consumer of art without understanding it. Anyway, yeah, Carolyn Tuesday is just. I can't wait to see the second half of it. Watanabe is showing that, you know, he's still got a lot of interesting ideas in him. It's just a great show.
Yeah, it's a wonderful show, and we'll be talking about it in just a moment here. My number four is Oh, Maidens in Your Savage Season.
Oh, yep. Our lists are identical.
Yeah. Is that also your number four?
It's not my number four, but it's on my list.
Even higher. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about it when we get to it on your list.
Okay.
What's your number three?
My number three is Promare.
Oh, okay.
Do we talk about that when we get to
when
it higher
get to
on your
it
list?
On my list. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
My number three is Sarazanmai.
Okay. Got anything to add to what I said earlier when it was on my list?
Honestly, I do think it is, like, behind Yurikuma, I would rank the Ikuhara shows. Now, these are all wonderful shows. And you should watch any one of them. But the way I would rank Ikuhara's output is number one, the Utena movie. Number two, Yurikuma Arashi. Number three, Sarazanmai. Number four, the Utena TV show. Number five, Penguin Drum. So I would put Sarazanmai just above Utena. But that's largely because, like I said, I'm always a fan of brevity. Like, you just get it out there. And he does very quickly in Sarazanmai. You get it pretty fast. There's a few disappointing things about the story. But the animation's good. The opening and closing are excellent.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it is the easiest to completely comprehend of all of his work. Because he can be kind of, you know, surrealist and obtuse. But it is
it's just funny to say that because it's about kids turning into Kappa and like going up monsters' butts. And yet the easiest to understand. It's true, though. It is the easiest one to, I think, comprehend on a whole.
Yeah.
But it's still very weird.
Easily, yeah. And of course it is. Well, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your number two?
My number two is O Maidens.
Okay. So, let's talk about this one a little bit. We've talked about it before, but how did you feel about how it wrapped? Because it's done now.
Yeah.
For now. I think they're going to probably do a second season.
But I hope they do a second season. Because I ended up loving all the girls in the show. It's sort of similar to what I was saying about A Place Further Than the Universe, about the cast of girls in that show. They feel like real girls. Like, I related very heavily to Hongo, but as the writer character who's trying to become a better writer and feels too inexperienced and things like that. But all of them, you know, they had their own insecurities, their own ways of trying to solve their problems, whether mature or immature, their own kind of hangups. You know, you had the one girl who was kind of a prude, but needed to reassess like how sex is natural and the desire to have sex is natural. It just felt really honest about the adolescent experience for girls.
Yeah. And again, I think this is probably Okada's strongest work for me. Like, mm-hmm. I think this is her best work because it's so emotionally raw. And all the characters, like, they'll have moments where you're like, what the fuck are you doing?
As an adult, you're just like, no, wait, yeah, don't
do that. Yeah. And I know, I understand some plot points kind of skeeve people out a little bit, but I feel like the show redeems all of that and justifies it and mm-hmm. makes it very relatable.
Yeah.
That to me, I think, is the show's biggest strength, is taking really difficult and sometimes traumatic questions that happen to a lot of us in adolescence and turns them into something deeply relatable.
Yeah.
So at the end, you're not judging these girls. You're going on this journey with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you see yourself in them quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You either relate to them, you want to watch over them. But like you said, again, they're all very likable. Even if they don't always make the best choices, you understand why they do.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that you fuck up so much when you're a teenager, especially when it comes to sex. And it's such a clumsy, awkward, like, puberty is horrible.
Yeah.
So that's, like, that could be the subtitle of this. Puberty is horrible. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, it's a very strong show. I really enjoyed it. I'm still reading the manga. It's very good. I highly recommend that one too. If you're done with the show, you can keep going with the manga, because I don't think they did the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
So yeah, really, really great shit. Very strong. Enjoyed that one quite a lot. Okay.
What's your number two?
Carolyn Tuesday.
Okay.
Which we already talked about. Gosh, our tastes are quite similar this year.
Yeah. Well, at least for 2019, it didn't seem like there was a...
I'm looking forward to the second half. Great music, love the characters, love their interplay. I really loved the exact way it was set up to where these two are basically running. Like, they're running from garbage. Like, they're kind of running from, you know, bad circumstances, and they find themselves through performance, but then they have to deal with the world of performance.
Right.
It means to be a paid musician. And I thought it had very insightful commentary. I know a lot of people complained about the, you know, the American Idol arc, but I thought it was very entertaining. I thought it was good. It was effectively paced. I didn't think they were wasting too much time on it. It was good. I didn't see what really the complaints were about.
Yeah. If you like the music, I guess if you don't like the music, maybe you'd be bored by it, but I enjoyed each artist performing in their own way. So
I don't know. There's a lot of people who like come up in my mentions and are like, well, just wait till you get to the second half, sort of ominously telling me that it has some sort of problematic thing in it or something. But like, I'm not that sensitive. So if there is like some deeply problematic thing in it, I will call it out for that. But just can't see it really going there. But
I'm pretty skeptical.
I may eat those words. Who knows? I could be completely wrong, and I will watch it and be like, what the fuck and shit? Right now, second best thing I saw this year.
Yeah.
Okay, you're number one.
Mob Psycho 2, which I talked about on our 4-hour podcast, because it was also my number one for the decade.
Yeah, I honestly have to admit, I was a little shocked that you honestly think that's not only the best thing of the year, but the best thing of the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's good, but dude.
I can't think of a single bad thing to say about it. Like, it just really worked for me on an emotional level. It was animation skill on display through the whole thing. It's just amazing. I really like all of the characters, which that's sort of a big thing for me for any of my picks, is whether I like the characters or not.
Compelling argument, Lindsay.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I was on debate team once, but didn't do so hot. So,
Well,
here I am.
No, I admittedly did not watch Mob Psycho 100.
Then you can't counter me.
You're right.
So
I have nothing to add. Can you guess what my number one is?
It is Promare.
Yeah,
the boys quit at the end.
It sure is.
I'm two for two for picking your number one. Just saying. Give me a trophy.
A tour de force. Easily by a country mile, the best thing I have seen this year. I have gushed about this movie many times. It's made by Studio Trigger. It's about a fireman versus a race of people that can burst fire from their hands, and they kiss at the end. And
it's about a fireman and his fireman.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good one. one of the most satisfying theatrical experiences I have had this year, period. If it wasn't on this list, it would have been on my top films of the year list, but I had to do two, so there's number one on anime. Do not fucking miss this thing. Really hope they announce a Blu-ray release date for it very soon. I would love it in 4K. Please just give it to me so I can watch it whenever I want to. Thank you very much. Okay, that's that. Why don't we get to some of these Twitter questions?
All right.
How about it? Okay, first up from Steve K and a big string of numbers. Is there anything in particular anime-wise you're looking forward to in 2020? Adaptations, light novel stories, stuff like that. Happy holidays, and thanks. Well, thank you, Steve. The only thing that's really on my radar right now... Well, okay. There's a movie called Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0 coming out in the summertime, which is, of course, the biggest fucking event of my life. So, yeah, of course, I'm looking forward to that. That one in Beastars, which is, I don't know, maybe spring next year or something like that on Netflix. It's in jail. But I'm very much looking forward to that one. What about you?
God, there's going to be a new season of Haikyuu that's going to air in January finally. So I might finally, going to get to see my volleyball boys again. So I'm pretty excited for that. Obviously the Ava movie, like you said, and Beastars whenever that comes out. Also, I've heard a lot of good things about Dorohedoro.
Dorohedoro. Yeah. No, I'll check that one out too. That sounds good. The manga's good. It's quite good actually. So
yeah,
that'll be cool.
So that's pretty much it so far. I mean, with a lot of
in our line of work, we tend to take this stuff one season at a time.
You
have to. Otherwise you go crazy. I don't have the encyclopedia brain that lets me keep track of literally all of it all the time.
Yeah.
So let's see. J. Marzi Harris asks, what did you do to recover from the Revenge of the 2010s marathon? Thanks for all the work and happy holidays. Well, happy holidays to you, our friend. What did I do? Well, there's a substance called marijuana.
It's legal in the good parts of the
country.
It
is legal here. It's legal. So, that's what I did. And I watched a lot of, movies. What about you?
I'm trying to remember. I might have blacked out immediately once it was over.
Yeah,
came back to consciousness 24 hours later or something.
Yeah, it was nap time after that.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and did. It took 4.5 hours, a little over 4.5 hours to tape that. And then it took me about 8 hours to edit it because I also had to make that cold open with Mike and Daryl, which thanks again, guys, for that. It turned out good. Yeah, so...
Daryl's a great Deku. He really is.
He really is. He
He brought it.
I could totally hear him as, like, the lead in a shonen show. He was good. Okay, William Ball says, is there a manga, comic, or book you'd love to see get a film or TV adaptation that hasn't had one yet? Yes, my answer is Our Dreams at Dusk would make a very good either anime or live action.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think. I'd like a second season of The Ancient Magus Bride really bad.
You'll probably get that at some point.
I hope so. They made, Wit Studio made a little animated trailer when the college arc started. And I was like, I miss this show. Please bring it back. So I'd love a second season of that.
You'll probably get one. Yon Song asks, if you had to pitch some anime movies or directors to an open-minded film critic that only really knows Miyazaki, Kon, Shinkai, what would you pick? I was thinking Yuasa, but which films specifically? Well, I got one.
Okay.
Promare.
Yeah, I think it has, the possibility for more mainstream appeal. It's flashy. It's fun. You don't need any knowledge before going into it. It's not like an entry to some big long thing where you've got to like see all this stuff to get the full story. So, you know, yeah, I think that would work really well.
The thing is, if you're an open-minded film critic, and which means that you're, you know, open to anything and you're interested in art of all kinds, there's a lot I would recommend. I mean, I would probably start with Premiere, the Utena movie, and maybe Dokusei, that BL movie that came out not too long ago.
Oh yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's good, but it's also a good introduction to the genre, and I think it would be like, oh, I've never seen anything quite like this before. So yeah, I would probably go with those.
I'd have to really think about it if I was going to add something.
Yeah, it's a little on the spot kind of question. I would maybe show him a little Rintaro, maybe Metropolis, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a Space Adventure Cobra movie, for sure.
I've never seen that. Yeah. I haven't seen any Space Adventure Cobra, though. So.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm going to make you watch it at some point.
Okay.
Okay, and now, as always, our thoughts turn to Star Wars. The Genderqueer Engineer asks, now that the new trilogy is over, what are your hopes for the leads? Daisy Ridley, Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Adam Driver, in terms of future roles and careers? Well, they can basically do whatever they want.
Adam Driver's already doing more things. I mean, we just talked about him in Marriage Story, so it's not like he's into sci-fi or anything.
He is in a lot of stuff because he's an extremely good actor.
Yeah.
And he's great in everything he's in. A lot of people want to work with him.
Boyega's been in some stuff too, right?
Yeah, he did that really crappy Pacific Rim sequel.
Oh, right.
And a few other things. I hope that he also does some arty stuff. My wish for anyone who gets trapped in a franchise like that, like I want them to take the Robert Pattinson route, which is, yeah, I'm just gonna make arty shit for a really long time and get that franchise out of my system.
Yeah.
And I hope that my only hope for them is that they make things that make them happy, because I like all of those actors. And and not just because I liked their characters in the films, they're all really excellent actors. And, you know, the hope that you have for any actor is that they get to do what they want instead of what they have to. So, yeah, I don't know what their contracts are. They might be contracted for more stuff on Star Wars, but I would love to, you know, anytime they'll show up in anything, I'll be like, hey, all right, Boyega's here, you know?
Like, yeah,
that's always kind of been my attitude. Okay, Eventual Vagabond asks, is there any particular place, era, character, story that you think Star Wars should explore now that its sequels are over for now? Well, in my opinion, they're already making The Mandalorian, which is quite good. Mm-hmm. Not that I necessarily needed the Boba Fett show, but it's not Boba Fett, but I just like to call it that.
Right.
They're exploring that. I am very curious about the Obi-Wan show that they have coming up, starring my boy Ewan McGregor, who I'm always happy to see in anything.
Oh, I didn't know they were going to Ewan McGregor to come back for that.
Yeah, they're making that. Honestly, there's a lot of this stuff that I think would work better as Disney Plus, you know.
Right.
You know,
I'd be interested in like some Knights of the Old Republic stuff.
Yeah, that would be cool. But I think it would also work better as like an hour long serial that they did once a week on Disney Plus.
Right, yeah. I meant as like a TV series, not like a movie trilogy.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. I think you could probably adapt that story really well. And I think and it would certainly make the fanboys, as they are referred to, happy. Here's an interesting one. Dead Demon 255 says, theoretically, if Anno made Ava 3.0 plus 1.0 in the same vein of satisfying fans, quote-unquote, who didn't like 3.33, like how Rise of Skywalker was to The Last Jedi, how would that film play out? Well, I would be deeply disappointed, I'll tell you that much, if it's like, oh, we're pissed off because whatever, it didn't go exactly the way I wanted it to. I mean, I cannot possibly sit here and plot out an Evangelion movie for you, but I can tell you that, like, what would likely happen is that, like, Shinji gets with one of the ladies, and the ladies are all, like, a little more subservient, and it's mostly just robot action, and they just kind of dump all of the emotional meaning in it.
Just, which to me, that doesn't even sound like an Ava film.
I don't think he's even fucking capable of making something like that. Like I can't.
Most people are like fanboys of the Ava franchise. Like, were they even watching it?
Yeah. not with their eyes open. Yeah.
No. Yeah. It's like the end of Evangelion. That whole thing is him saying fuck you to the fanboys at that period of time. What makes you think that? I would hope that he wouldn't. Yeah, I don't foresee that happening.
Sir Dan asks, was Rian Johnson right all along, as we knew? Yes, he was.
Yes, of course.
Marco says, how do you guys feel Colin Trevorrow's episode 9 would have turned out? I think we actually saw more of it than you might think.
Yeah.
Also, like, that script has his fingerprints fucking all over it. Anyway, also, what's something about anime now that you wouldn't have believed if you were told at the start of the decade? Oh, that's
enough. That it'd all be streaming online.
That it would all be owned by one of like four companies, and it would be giant business. It would be $1 billion business.
Yeah,
I probably wouldn't have believed that. Exotic Swami says, "Do you think Star Wars should stop with the trilogy formula?" I don't care. Like, make whatever you want. I'll probably watch it. Like, if you make another, I just can't bring myself to be like, no, it should be this and only this.
Yeah.
They'll probably make another trilogy at some point. If they're smart, they're going to give it like 5 years before they do another trilogy.
Yeah.
Like, they'll keep it to Disney Plus, and then in five, you know, give people time to have it not completely flooding their feeds, because this year alone, two theme park openings, giant theme park openings, The Mandalorian, and then episode 9, one right after each other.
Yeah.
Overkill. If it's not fatigue, I don't know what it is. Like, people have got to be getting sick of this. And, like, you can't really do Star Wars in the same way that you do Marvel.
Right.
Like, you know, it's one aesthetic. It's one set of characters. It's constantly referencing these sets of characters from these movies. And it's not that many characters. Whereas Marvel, you can run it into the ground over and over again. Because the Black Panther movie is not going to really be that much like the Spider-Man movie, is not going to really be much like the Doctor Strange movie, is not really going to be that much like the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. So
right.
There's enough variety there, but like Star Wars just doesn't, and that's not a knock on it. It's just that you can't really Marvelize it in the same way you can Marvelize Marvel, I suppose, so to speak. Exotic Swami also asks, how would you compare the prequels to Skywalker in terms of enjoyment?
So the prequels and just the final film of this trilogy?
Yes. That's a toughie. I did put out a ranking of the 9 Star Wars movies in this saga, quote unquote. And, I actually ranked Revenge of the Sith higher than Rise of Skywalker. And that is largely because at least Revenge of the Sith felt like it had some emotional stuff, and it had
pod racing.
A lot of really good. Well, not a lot. Oh, let me take that back. One or two really good scenes, and it provided a satisfying emotional conclusion to what was an extremely flawed trilogy. The ending of Revenge of the Sith is better than most of The Rise of Skywalker, I would say. Which, you know, hot take, but that's how it kind of made me feel. I walked out of Revenge of the Sith feeling satisfied. I walked out of this one being kind of like, the fuck?
Yeah. So for me, I guess, God, it's just like The Rise of Skywalker is such a safe film. It's like inoffensive, except for the parts that made me mad, I guess. And the prequel trilogy is kind of, it's just become sort of like a meme status at this point. Like, you can watch Return of the Sith for, I don't know, for humor, I guess. Like, I'm trying to think, like, if watching bad performances be poorly directed is more entertaining than watching not much of anything emotionally captivating happen. And that's really hard.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, swap them around, give or take. They're all in the same bin of, like, bad Star Wars movies. Like,
yeah.
There's a bin of bad and a bin of good. And there's plenty of good ones and now plenty of bad ones. So, you know, it just depends. Yeah, your mileage may vary, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. I will say that like the prequels at least had like idiosyncratic weirdness in them. And
yeah.
Like you said, Rise of the Skywalker, so safe and so easy that it doesn't challenge you at all. It doesn't even ask you to think. It's just
no.
Like, yeah. Ugh. Okay, last question. Lum Ron Mayasha asks, if Disney were to produce a Star Wars anime, who would you want to write and direct it and what studio to animate it? Oh, I have an answer for you. If you have seen the Titmouse series, Star Wars Galaxy of Adventures, which is literally just the audio from the original trilogy reanimated.
Like, whoa, seriously?
Yeah, it's just the audio from the original trilogy. They do little clips. These are just little blips.
Oh, okay.
They're like minutes long. I want them to do the whole thing like that because those clips, a Titmouse knocked that shit out the park. It looks great. It is the Star Wars anime for sure. Like, wasn't animated in Japan, but it looks like anime does, and really great fight choreography, wonderfully like adorable character designs for everyone. It's so good. So I highly recommend checking that out. I want them to make a whole movie that looks like it would be like Spider-Verse. Like, that's what that okay. would be like. It would be so good. So yeah, check that shit out if you haven't seen it. Yeah, then any other take?
I guess the only other one I'd put on it is that I think Bones would do really great with it. And that's 100% based on my love for Mob Psycho 2. Like, if they got the Mob Psycho 2 Bones team on it, I think it would look great and they would get all the emotional beats perfect. So
cool.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Okay. That wraps us up for this show and for the year. Lindsay, thank you so much for doing the show with me. It's been a wonderful time.
Yeah, it's been great. Can't wait for 2020.
Okay, that's our show and our year. Thank you all for stopping on by. Big thanks to my co-host, Lindsay. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find this show. Leave us a comment or a rating or something. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all in 2020.